This is Christopher O'Reilly, and welcome to this week's podcast of From the Top. Enjoy.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. So many of the young performers on our show go on to do amazing things in music, like a young pianist you'll meet again today. He was a medalist in the Van Cliburn International Piano Competition, the first American prize winner in 16 years. Today he's back to share his tales of success and, of course, his music. Here's our host, one of America's finest concert pianists, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thank you and welcome, everybody. We're at the Batt Center on the campus of Wingate University in Wingate, North Carolina, and we want to thank them for bringing us to this beautiful college town about a half hour down the road from Charlotte. Joanne mentioned the From the Top alum, Sean Chen, who had great success this year at the Van Cliburn competition. But he's not the only pianist on today's show who's a competition winner. You'll also meet two Charlotte area pianists who brought back the gold this year as winners of the Music Teachers National Association competition. They won in the duet category, and you'll soon hear why. Their collaboration is seamless and totally in sync. But first, I get to enjoy collaborating with our first performer, a terrific 16-year-old flutist who's come down here from Vienna, Virginia. Please welcome Olivia Staten. Olivia, tell everyone about this moody, ritualistic work we're about to bring them.
We will be performing the Chantelinos by André Jolivet.
Thank you.
Olivia Staten, 16-year-old flutist from Vienna, Virginia, performing Chantalinos by André Jolivet. Well, bravo, Olivia. I think it's one of the most challenging pieces for flute that I know of. Isn't that true?
Yes, thank you.
I mean, my gosh, you just bring it off with such panache. I mean, the mood. I mean, Jolivet originally wrote it as a competition piece for the Paris Conservatoire, and so it has all kinds of challenges and tests, rhythm being probably foremost among them, but you really get all kinds of beautiful sounds as well.
Thank you very much.
Crystal clear. So do you like that kind of challenge of the rhythmic playing?
Yes, definitely. I mean, not only is this piece challenging rhythmically, but also obviously it's very technically challenging, and a lot of the intervals are very spread, so that's difficult, and a lot of articulation is difficult, but I definitely enjoy it a lot. And a piece I think is comparable in difficulty that I was fortunate enough to play at Tanglewood this summer is The Rite of Spring.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And like this piece, you have to really know the rhythms, obviously. A lot of pieces, you can kind of get away with feeling the music and kind of just feeling when you need to come in and just hearing it. But with The Rite of Spring especially, you have to know every count, you have to know everyone else's part, and I really enjoy the mathematical way of thinking about that. And
that's right.
I played the piccolo part, so I had to be right every time.
Math and music are great correlative skills, I think. It's very frustrating when I run into musicians who are doing a really hard piece and they say, oh, well, let's just feel it together, you know. It doesn't quite work that way. You got to get the nuts and bolts right. And then, as you do, you know, you let the rhythm is done. It's in your soul, and then you can just evoke as this. This is originally a piece for, I guess it was meant to be like a Greek funereal.
In the score it says a funeral lamentation interrupted by cries and dances.
Right. You know, sort of primitive Greek, you know, sort of Bacchic sort of thing. Beautifully done. It's not just music with you, though, Olivia. I know you grew up doing ballet quite seriously until very recently, and I love your story about combining the two.
Yes. Last year in my high school's marching band show, we started off the season where I had a flute solo, and that was great. So I had a flute solo with the C flute, the regular flute. And then they added an alto flute solo, so then I had two flutes. And then later on, they added dance. So I had to play one flute solo and then another flute solo, and then I went behind a tree, and I had 36 seconds to change into a dress. So I wore this dress underneath my marching band uniform. And in the 36 seconds, I had to take off my marching band uniform, roll up my pant legs to go under the dress, and take my shoes off so I was barefoot, and take off the stupid Shaco marching band hat thing. And then I came out behind this tree, and I played another flute solo in this dress. And then I put my flute down, and I did, in ballet terms, tombe, pas de break, glissade, saut de chat, across the football field, which are like split jumps across the field.
Oh, my God. Longest punt return in pas de chat ever. Well, Olivia, you're multi-talented, and thank you for bringing such an evocative opening to the
program.
Thank you
very
much
for having me.
Great to have you. Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Olivia Staten, 16 years old, our flutist from Vienna, Virginia.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at fromthetop.org. Over the last 8 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded nearly $2 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Qingyu Chen is our next young performer, and she's out on stage with me now. She's 13 and a violinist from Oakland Gardens, New York. That's in Queens. Qingyu, what does your teacher, Masao Kawasaki, tell you about playing this piece?
He always says it has to be full of energy and has to be sassy.
Sassy Sansons. All right. Well,
yep.
Let's give him what he wants, shall we? This is the introduction and Rondo Capriccioso by Sansons. Thank you. Jinyu Chen, 13 years old, our violinist from Oakland Gardens, New York, performing Introduction in Rondo Capriccioso by Camille Saint-Saëns. Jinyu is one of our Jack Kent Cook young artists. Well, Jinyu, if I had one word to sum up that performance, I think it would be sassy. So really sassy performance indeed. Just love playing that with you.
Thank
and
you.
I know you have a personality with a lot of sass. Tell everyone what you got up to with your hugely tolerant dad.
Well, when my dad comes home from work, he always likes to drink something before he does whatever he wants to do. So my genius sister and I decided to make a drink for him with black vinegar, Nutella, salt, sugar, and all that good stuff. And so we presented it to him. I think he wasn't suspicious at all because he was too tired. He drank a spat all over the place, and he said he would get us back.
Oh, my gosh. Now, I know it, besides getting up to mischief, you have a very sympathetic side, too. Like with kids at your middle school, you're always helping out and stuff.
We have many new immigrants, students from China who don't really speak as much English. So whenever in my free time, I try to help them out as much as I can. I translate for them in Mandarin so that they actually can know what is going on. And it's just a joy to see them even smile in gratitude and just high-fiving each other when they understand everything.
Well, and I know it's not just translation. It's a transition from a very sort of doubtful atmosphere into a very positive atmosphere. I know you're very generous with your smiles, as you are right now on stage. And, Jinyu, it was just great playing with the Saint-Saëns with you. Just fantastic
Thank
performance.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Best of luck. Jinyu Chen, 13 years old, our violinist from Queens, New York. Now we're going to be joined by the two local performers I spoke of earlier from Charlotte and Davidson, North Carolina, Hannah Wang and Clara Gerdes, both 17 years old. They're going to play from the Hindemith Sonata for piano four hands, but it's not always the hands they're worried about.
Okay, piano four hands.
I think struggle is the right word. You tell them.
You're squeezed up next to this person, literally battling for territory on the piano keyboard and the pedals.
Yeah, I think the pedaling is definitely the hardest part. Like, there are parts in the music where you literally have to change pedals with the other person without letting go of the pedal.
And the way you think about it, it's totally counterintuitive and totally different from, you know, regular piano playing by yourself. You have to pedal for the other person a lot of the time.
I think the most interesting experience we had with the pedal was at our first competition together towards the end of the Mendelssohn, Clara had forgotten to let go of the pedal. And so we were just sitting there. And so I actually had to kick her off the pedal so that I could take over the pedal and we could finish the piece.
And the funniest part of it was that this whole time, you know, while we're having this battle over, you know, who's going to put whose foot in what place, you know, we still have to keep our act together because we're still competing. We're still playing for the judges and they can see us.
Yeah. And I think the judges' comments came back after that and they literally said, it's really interesting what you're doing with your feet, which I'm not sure if it's a compliment
or not. That was
one
way to put it, yeah. I guess.
We don't have to fight for the pedal that much in the piece we're about to play.
It's Paul Hindemith's Sonata for Piano Four Hands, Movement 3.
But we do really have to focus on landing exactly together on all of our chords. So we'll be doing a lot of weird sniffing and counting and nodding.
Hope you enjoy it.
Hannah Wang and Clara Gerdes, both 17 years old and both from the Charlotte area, performing from Hindemith's Sonata for Piano Four Hands. Well, I've played a lot of Hindemith in my life. I don't remember thinking of the words Hindemith and beautiful in the same sentence. I mean, there are some famous pieces, but my gosh, you have such commitment to this work, and it's truly beautiful and synchronous, to say the least. I mean, you guys are of one mind, but just gorgeous playing.
Thank you.
So, hey, so who, I didn't even notice, who won the Battle of the Pedals that time?
Clara did, but it was only because I let her.
Okay. Well, there's the give and take of the four hands, you know. symbiosis is very, yes, very important. You guys, as I mentioned, won the Music Teachers National Association Senior Piano Duet Competition in California last year. And I hear you were local celebrities when you returned to North Carolina. Clara, what happened when you arrived at the airport?
Well, it was really surprising. We got off the plane, and there were a bunch of people standing and clapping, and actually TV crews from several local stations all standing at the baggage claim. And it turned out that our piano teacher, who was actually here tonight, had actually set up the entire thing, which was really nice. So
it was really special.
Yeah, it was really special, but also very surprising.
I know. It didn't give you the heads up so you could do your hair and makeup before your TV appearance.
We came out looking all like disheveled from a four-hour plane ride, and then there were like cameras, and we just thought, oh, no.
Oh, I'm sure you look just fine. Get used to the paparazzi, you know. You're going to have to get used to it. Well, you are truly a great piano team, and I know really good friends. But you say that you're not at all alike. So, Hannah, point out the differences.
Well, there are a few, to say the least. I mean, we come from very different family backgrounds. My family's Chinese. Clara.
I'm German-American, mostly.
I go to a really big public school with, like, 3,000 kids.
I'm homeschooled.
Outside of piano, I mean, I do a lot of competitive debate, and
I also play the organ. I also spend a lot of time on that.
I Facebook a lot, but Clara doesn't
have a Facebook.
There's another one. Yeah.
So how do these differences come up when you're playing together or just being together, working together?
Well, it means that we have, you know, twice as many different ideas and insights and inspirations and opinions about how the music should be played.
Absolutely.
And I guess the downside of it is that it means that we have we can get twice as obsessive about how to play something.
So you're sitting there and you have twice as much criticism to deal with.
Yeah.
The greatest musical textures, I feel, are always a matter of culmination of opposites, things that are different and coming together and mixing, and they make the best match, and you guys really do. Gorgeous performance. Thank you for being
with
us. And best
of luck.
Thank
you for having us.
Hannah Wang and Clara Gerdes from Charlotte and Davidson, North Carolina, both 17 years old.
Being in the audience for a From the Top taping is an unforgettable experience. We tape shows all over the country, and this February we'll be taping a show at our home base, New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. For tickets and info, go to fromthetop.org.
Support for From the Top comes from this and other radio stations, and from U.S. Trust, believing that the arts have a vital role in stimulating the hearts and imaginations of our country's best young musicians. From New England Conservatory of Music, where young artists and teachers are committed to transforming classical music. Online at necmusic.edu. And from the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, whose mission is to advance the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org. This is NPR.
Thank you.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. This week, we're coming to you from the Batt Center on the campus of Wingate University in Wingate, North Carolina. Coming up, a prize winner at this year's Van Cliburn competition performs a wildly thrilling etude by Ligeti called The Devil's Staircase. Today's show is made possible with support from Bank of America and WDAV Classical Public Radio. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. Joining us now is an outstanding 18-year-old bassoonist from Exeter, New Hampshire, who's just starting to study at the Shepherd School of Music at Rice University, Isaac Schultz. Isaac, I know you have a real affinity for Baroque music, and in particular this Telemann Sonata. Tell everyone what we're going to play together.
We'll be playing the second movement of the Telemann F minor Sonata for bassoon.
Isaac Schultz, 18 years old, our bassoonist from Exeter, New Hampshire, playing the second movement of the sonata in F minor by Georg Philipp Telemann. Well, so poised, Isaac, but also just so spontaneous and serendipitous, the repeats that you threw in, those wonderful ornaments. Just very, very inspiring and really, gosh, very fresh, very spontaneous. Enjoyed that very much. Isaac, we asked you to tell us about your family, your love of the outdoors, and your choice to pursue music.
I grew up in a bit of a music camp. This is the Schultz family trio. My parents are both musicians. My mother plays the oboe. My father plays the flute. And so I really grew up with music all around me, even before I was born. My mother took me on tour with the Bethlehem Bach Choir, so I got a little Bach in the womb. But in the summer, we go to a real music camp where my parents teach. It's called the Kinhaven School of Music in Vermont. It's an absolutely amazing place. One of my greatest memories of Kinhaven is that one summer the entire faculty got together, made a chamber orchestra, and played Siegfried Idol by Wagner, which is just, it's such an incredibly beautiful piece, and it's so romantic, so full of love. It really affected me deeply that music could mean that much and carry that much significance. It was an incredibly beautiful moment, you know, hearing my parents play that. It was wonderful. At one point in high school, I just felt that it was all getting a bit too much for me. So I signed up to do this semester program in Vermont called the Mountain School. And that's an experience that really affected me deeply. As part of this program, everyone spends 3 days alone in the woods, just doing whatever. What you do is up to you. I wasn't bored for one moment during those 3 days. I mean, I kind of went a bit crazy at times, but I was never bored. On the second night, I was on a ridge over a stream, and I went down to the stream because I thought, all right, let's see this place at night, you know. And I laid down on this big, smooth rock, limestone, and I just looked up at well, the trees and the stars, and the wind was blowing that night. It was really blowing. It was howling in the trees, and as I looked up, the trees were moving. There was the shapes that were created with the branches in the sky. They were constantly changing. It was scary. It felt like all of it could come crashing down. The trees, the sky, everything. It was very fragile, and that's something that I'll never forget. I really love the outdoors. So it was a really tough decision to go down to Houston to study music at Rice. I mean, I don't see a tree ever, and that can be kind of depressing at times. It's a choice I have to live with. I really had to make a conscious effort to choose music, and I think that even though I wouldn't take back my choice for the world, I think that I absolutely made the right choice. I could have been equally happy had I put the bassoon in the case and never played again. So I think that gives me an even stronger connection to music.
Well, Isaac, I loved hearing about the Wagner and the outdoors, and actually sort of you really evoke not only the magnificence, but a little bit of the terror of nature. And I think that that becomes part of you as a musician, and that gives you some gravity and some experience that a lot of other kids your age probably would never have. We didn't hear, though, why you chose the bassoon. Why particularly this instrument?
Well, when I was younger, you know, every kid has that little thing that they help their parents with. And for me, it was helping my mother gouge cane because she's an oboist, so she has to make her reeds, and she has a lot of machines that help to do the job. So you know, I'd help her run the machines, and bassoonists get an extra machine. They get a profiling machine on top of the gougers, and for some reason that really appealed me, to me. You know, have an extra machine. That was too cool. I didn't really like that was the reason that I chose the bassoon for a long time. I'd always say, yeah, I like the bassoon. I chose it because of its mournful, dark and rich tone.
No, it's just because you're a DIY kind of guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it is a rich and mournful and soulful sound in your hands. And
gosh,
the Telemann was really spectacular.
Thank you.
Loved having you. Thanks, Isaac. Isaac Schultz, 18 years old, our bassoonist from Exeter, New Hampshire, now studying at Rice.
Up next is Sean Chen, the From the Top alum who was a prize winner at the 2013 Van Cliburn competition. Learn about his world tour and his new CD of live recordings at fromthetop.org. Chris.
Please welcome Sean Chen. Sean, it's been a while since you were on our program, and you've done a lot since then. You've won a lot of competitions, but man, to be the first American prize winner since 1997 at the Cliburn, that's extraordinarily impressive.
Yeah, well, I don't think I'm the only American in here that's won a prize at the Cliburn, so...
Oh, yeah, well, I was last century, so that this hardly counts. You've brought a piece that'll show everyone why you did so well at the Van Cliburn. What are you going to play?
This is Ligeti's 13th etude, L'Escalier du Diable, means double staircase.
Thank you.
Sean Chen, an alumnus of our show, currently getting his artist diploma at Yale. He played The Devil's Staircase, Etude No. 13 by Georgi Ligeti. Well, that was astonishing.
Thanks so
much.
That
was really quite something, Sean. And actually, you were explaining to me earlier the mathematics behind this, and you mentioned a word, and when I was hearing Isaac talking about the trees and the majesty of the trees, there's a fractal aspect to this.
Yes.
Explain in that sort of nature sort of way how people might understand that.
Sure. Just in the way the tree, you splits off, you have a trunk and you have branches, and then within the branches you have more branches, and if you take any specific part of it, you can't mathematically distinguish it from the whole tree. So in the same way, the double staircase is actually a mathematical principle. If you look up on Wikipedia, you can find it. But the point is that it's a continuing kind of ascending graph with contour. And if you zoom in at each different level, you can actually see, you can't tell the difference. It looks the same. And so Ligeti was trying metrically actually to divide up the groups of notes in a similar way. And he's consistent about it for about first page and a half. And then he starts to experiment with different combinations and offsets. So it's really... It doesn't sound like it, but
it gives the piece a certain force of nature, sort of power to
I think
it,
so
and
too.
Integrity.
Yes,
I mean there's an inevitability to the piece that one wouldn't imagine in that sort of quasi chaotic way.
Right,
you hear the piece, it's just splendid performance. Let's talk a little bit more about competitions. Now, as a young guy, early in your career, you've been in lots of competitions. Are you generally of the opinion that they're generally a good thing or generally a bad thing, or how do you think of it?
I think it depends on the individual competitor's mindset and how they approach the competition. If you, I always tell people, I am prepared, I practice like I want to win, and I practice that I want to play my best and show people what I get, what I have. But I never expect to win. If you expect to win, you're setting yourself up for, disappointment. And it's not just... It's a mental thing. I mean, the competition by itself is random within a certain set of boundaries. I mean, the jury members have differing opinions. Given one day, somebody could have had a bad cheeseburger and didn't like your playing, and the other person didn't sleep well and wasn't happy with your repertoire choice or whatever. So even if you played your absolute best, you're not guaranteed to even pass the first round. So
you were telling me a particular moment. I mean, all of this head scratching about what the jury's going to think and this and
right.
that. I mean, what was the moment for you at the Clyburn where you just said?
Yeah, well, with each round after round, I was playing on the second to last day and last day at the end of the competition, and you get the announcements, and the next day you have to prepare again. So there's you feel kind of pressured to be perfect all the time. And at a certain point, I just said, who cares about the right notes anymore? I mean, obviously, I want to play as accurately as possible, but when I went on stage, it wasn't about hitting 100% right notes anymore. And I realized that if I communicated and played what I felt I should be communicating in the music, it was more fun for me, more enjoyable, and actually it communicated better to the jury members, and it was liberating.
It's a more that's really the successful strategy is to just be yourself at your best.
Yes.
And congratulations by all means. Now, we just loved this idea of, our flute playing friend Olivia mentioned The Rite of Spring earlier, and you yourself played Stravinsky on the last show that you appeared on several years ago. And we heard a great piano duo earlier today, so we thought it would be fun for maybe you and me to do a little nice little parlor piece.
Yeah.
How about the
Sounds
finale
good.
Of The Rite of Spring for four hands?
Yeah, we should pass out some cocktails and
I know, yes. Very convivial. Yes, I think this would be a very nice way to end the program.
Yep.
All right, so we're going to join each other at the Old Steinway for this spectacular four-hand piece in honor of the 100th anniversary of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. This is his own arrangement of the final movement, the Sacrificial Dance. But before we fight for the pedals on this one, Sean, I want to thank all of our great young performers and thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And now, Sean, let's blow this out of the water. Mm-hmm.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Bagley and Tim Banker, with music producer Tom Vinieri. The tour producer is David Balsam and the production manager is Elizabeth DeVore, with Mark Williams. Technical direction by Barrett Willett, with Dan Hallis and John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. Our founding partners are New England Conservatory and WGBH Boston. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music.
Support for NPR comes from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, developing solutions to support strong families and communities for America's children at aecf.org. From the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, on the web at hewlett.org. From Newman's Own Foundation, giving all profits from Newman's Own to charity and pursuing the common good for over 30 years. And from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR.
This is Christopher O'Reilly, and I hope you had fun listening to this week's podcast. As you might imagine, making From the Top happen week after week costs quite a bit of dough. If you believe in what we do, we really need you to help us out. Make a contribution of any size at fromthetop.org.